I'm going to call this meeting to order. Today is Monday, April 19th, and this is the working session of the Elizabeth School District Board of Directors, and it is 6:02 p.m. Can I get roll call, please?
Director Beckendorf?
Here.
Director Cuffeller?
Here.
Director Gutenberg?
Here.
Director Hines?
Present.
Director Carter?
Here.
Would you please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Can I get a motion to approve the amended agenda? And the amendments are in addition under communications of in-person learning at Elizabeth High School and the addition of, proposed salary schedules removed from consent agenda of communications, and we added in hires and rehires to the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Cuffeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Carter?
Aye.
Can I get a motion to approve the board minutes from the meeting of April 5th, 2021?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Cuffeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Carter?
Aye.
Okay. Up next, we have our education showcase with Running Creek Elementary Principal Robin Hunt. Hi, Robin.
Hi.
Thank you for having me. I asked my teachers just to present to you all some of the celebrations they've had this year. So that's what this is a compilation of their celebrations. So can you know where you want? Next. This is our preschool, and what they wanted to share with you is that in a time where building relationships are challenging, that has been their number one priority, is building relationships. Okay, then on to kindergarten. I'm reading this is a little tricky down below. Kindergarten loves Running Creek. We're so grateful we were able to get a whole year in of learning with instruction with all of our friends. We had to make a few adjustments and be flexible, but we are so lucky and happy that Running Creek was our home during this crazy year. We still got to have celebrations, such as celebrating the 100th day of school with Zero the Hero. Sometimes we had to make connections through Zoom, and sometimes we had to step back and sharpen our saw and do what was best for our mind, body, heart, and soul. Thank you for allowing us to be together and making it happen so that kids could have a normal kindergarten experience. And you, I believe, on one of these,
yep,
here's our little online person who just sits there online. It's so cute, and they do this. Do you see this?
Oh, that's me.
So yeah. They are on an iPad, and they just carry them wherever they're going, and that's their experience in school when they're remote. It's really cute watching them carry them down the hall to specials or whatever. So it's just like their little friend. So,
that's neat.
No matter what the grade level is, and this is kinder, so it's pretty impressive. All right, going on to first grade. In first grade, we have had the great opportunity to bring in young students who have been out of school since March. Because of this, we had to work to help them recover all that they had lost during that time. These kids came in roaring to go and did a fantastic job of working through the many challenges that we all faced and have done a fantastic job. At RCE, these students are showing the type of work ethic, accountability, and leadership that makes us proud to be their teachers and excited to see what they are going to look forward to. That was first grade. They just finished their animal projects. That's why you see those.
Is that what the raccoon is there?
Yes, and the monkey.
And the monkey, yeah.
Okay, then going on to second grade. Second grade is one of our premier grade levels that teaches Leader in Me. They all teach Leader in Me, but some are just more robust with it. Okay, in second grade, students have been busy learning and practicing their leadership skills. The first habit they learned was being proactive. In the picture, students are practicing their math facts outside. The students knew they were in charge of their learning, learning important foundational skills for math and also getting fresh air to stay healthy. The second habit they learned was to begin with the end in mind. Students were able to plan, write, and publish their own stories. Putting things first helped second graders to learn about the types of matter before testing their thinking with a fun science lab. Students were challenged to create skills to demonstrate when we think win-win, we can compromise and work well together. Second graders were at the Elizabeth Veterans Memorial seeking information about the past to apply their learning and show appreciation to our current veterans. Second grade was synergizing outside while keeping our school clean. They filled a trash can together to help beautify our school grounds. Balance is best. Second graders enjoy parties and recess to remind them that keeping a balance of learning, hard work, fun, and play is best to help us grow. Then on to third grade. Third graders have had the opportunity to bring science and social studies to life with various hands-on real-world activities by creating their own companies and selling goods to the Running Creek community. They have also had the experience and opportunity to observe the life cycles of butterflies, praying mantises, and soon chicks. Students traveled all over the world through virtual experiences exploring different continents, oceans, and U.S. regions. Literacy Footprints has given students the possibility to dive deeper into rich content and illustrations. We are thankful for such a considerate community where families keep their children and child home in order to keep others safe and for a great deal of in-person learning to continue. Then on to fourth grade. Whoops, sneak peek. Fourth grade has kept busy this year. The students have panned for gold while hiking in Castlewood Canyon, experienced rock formations and layers while exploring Garden of the Gods, and examined the ruins at Manitou Cliff Dwellings. Most recently, they are preparing to travel to the Denver Natural History Museum. They haven't slowed down in the classroom either. Some have researched and prepared their own news reports, used knowledge of force and mass to complete tasks in hands-on experiments, baked pies, and created working cardboard roller coasters to demonstrate energy and friction. We have also successfully incorporated the new literacy footprints into the reading curriculum and have seen the kids' engagement increase. Fourth grade is rocking it. Geology joke. That's what it is. They've probably gone on more field trips than any of our grade levels have.
That's awesome.
I think they will go on at least six by the end of the school year.
Wow.
So it's been really engaging for them. They've done a great job. Fifth grade. Recently, our fifth graders had a chance to go to Young Ameritown, a simulation, to teach financial literacy and economics to kids. The Elizabeth Police Department and the Elizabeth Fire Department were able to come to Running Creek to play Foursquare with our kids. Students are also hard at work with hands-on activities. I have to laugh because if you see here, right here, this picture over here, when the police came, we had people in the neighborhood calling us to make sure we were all okay.
That's great.
The fire trucks came and the ambulance and the police. So it was really funny because the church called us, people across the street, Kristen called us. She was like, is everything okay? Just having a good time, that's all.
That's really cool.
That's awesome.
It was pretty funny. All right, and then specials. Music is not represented here because he does all of his things in movies. He's the one that actually created the movie last time I came. So what he wanted to let you know was that second grade is recording their around-the-world performance outside. And then if you'll see here, students are submitting videos of them doing their talents at home for the talent show. I think at the end of last year, you all got to see our talent show where we had kids out on tractors I can take out the trash, and they were taking trash out in a tractor instead of in the gym, so it was a fun experience for them. So we can see students show off their horse riding skills or dirt bike tricks, which we have never been able to do in the gym. Students raised over $7,000 for the American Heart Association. Wow. And because of that, we are getting 1,000 in U.S. game gift cards so we can buy PE equipment. The kids got a cup of slime to dump on me for every $10 they raised. And you can see this is Mr. Taz, is what they call him. And he was covered in slime. There wasn't an not even a pinprick that wasn't covered.
That's funny.
So they had a great time doing that. And you can see the kids here, but he did it through Zoom so that all the classrooms could join, and they just watched it on the camera.
If I could, I'd like to recommend Douglas be the subject of the slime next time.
I'm just thankful he's year. Willing.
Yeah. He said that with love.
To follow board leadership.
That's leadership.
Another thing he wanted to share was students have been able to use the lower field more this year thanks to a couple of parents that brought their tractor out to clear some space. Hopefully in the future we'll be able to have a real field down there. And then our art teacher, who is, she's been working with us for 3 weeks, and this is what she's been able to create in those 3 weeks. That's pretty impressive. She's fabulous. The kids absolutely adore her. So for Mother's Day, they're doing yarn weaving gifts. And then you can see our Title I support. Both our primary and intermediate title groups have been using the RISE framework to help our students grow close the gap in reading achievement. We were thrilled that you allowed us to purchase classroom sets of literacy footprints, a program that pairs direct, explicit reading instruction with high-interest texts and aligns perfectly with RISE, since they both use the same structure and language. Our CE was fortunate to have Karen Carter, a literacy specialist coach each grade level on the implementation of literacy footprints. So now students receive a true double dose of reading instruction when they take part in Title I reading support. And then I believe our last one is our special education department. The special education department has worked hard at collaborating to make sure we are supporting, guiding, and teaching our students so they can excel at their goals and personal growth. The students have been engaged in working in small groups and individually throughout the year. Last year, we were able to add an additional special education teacher to support the needs of students with more intensive behavior needs. The program grew exponentially this year, emphasizing the importance of having this classroom at Running Creek. So one of the things that we've noticed with COVID is the need for some additional mental health support. So it was just fortuitous, I guess, for lack of a better word, that we had a behavior teacher start this year, and her program's probably doubled since the start of the year. And then adding Kyle Summers, our behavior specialist, has just made a world of difference with what we're able to offer kids. So thank you for that. So that is the showcase for Running Creek. Thank you.
Do you have any questions?
No.
Thank you so much, Robin. We appreciate you coming in.
Thank you. That's great.
Especially with this wonderful weather.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, moving on to communications, we have superintendent update.
Well, thank you for adding this item to the agenda. This is an important item, and my goal is to review with you, not exhaustively, but the important points of what we've done as a district, and especially what we've done at Elizabeth High School to remain safely in person throughout the recent school year, as well as the past couple of weeks and some of the cases and the impact of those cases on the high school. So just to start with, as I've done before, and I really don't believe that you can say thank you too many times when it's true and when it's genuine. We would not be able to have in-person learning successfully and safely at any of our schools, and especially at Elizabeth High School, when we're dealing with teenage students, without the support of the Elizabeth High School parents, they have been integral to being safely in person. How? By a couple of things. One is the vast majority. I'm talking, we don't keep statistics, but somewhere between 95 and 99% have been following our protocols and cooperating, not sending their children to school when they're sick, not sending their children to school when they've been exposed. That has made a huge difference. What is that difference? It means that the number of students who've come to school with the virus is relatively small. Relative to what? Relative to the number of cases in our community. Relative to other high schools who are experiencing many more cases of the virus coming in. The other is then the communication with our parents. So when they've had questions, they've reached out to us. Questions like, what should I do? Here's the situation, and I'm not sure what to do. And primarily they've reached out to our district nurse, Roy Clark, who's been phenomenal. She's talked with hundreds and hundreds of families over this and has helped them understand what's going on, what they can do, and so forth. And that's been essential, that she's been available to them and that they've trusted her and reached out to her. They've also, the parents have reached out to our school staff, and that open communication has been good with the health tech, for example, at the high school. A lot of dialogue there. And there have been times where kids have been at school sick. Maybe they came sick, or maybe they got sick, and we've had to send them home. And so the parents have been supportive as best as possible when that happens. That's disruptive. Sometimes they've had to come pick them up, etc. There's another group that's been essential, and that is the high school staff. We're speaking primarily about the high school, but it's been true of all of our staff. It's been a challenge for them to deal with their personal situation, their own assessment of various risks, doing their work in this altered context and environment. Yet they have continued to put students as their priority, and they've continued to work together with each other as teachers, with the administration, and with the parents to deal with all of the challenges of some of their students going to remote learning, the different protocols that we have. I'd also like to recognize our students, especially our typically less, our more challenging ages are the secondaries, middle school and high school. But they have cooperated with their teachers and with the staff consistently. And you all have been in the schools, you've spent hours in the schools, you've seen what I'm talking about at the different schools. And that has continued up until today. It's in Elizabeth High School for a number of hours today. And while it is true that from time to time you will see students with a mask below their nose, they are wearing masks, and they're expected to wear masks, and the staff continue to gently remind them to wear their masks, and they're very cooperative. Now they might need to be told, some of them, they're kind of repeatedly, but the students have taken our protocols seriously. And if those three things hadn't happened, we would be in a different situation. So what are the results that have stemmed from that really positive cooperation and collaboration between our parents, our staff, and our students? In addition to some other measures, which I'll reference in just a minute, is that the high school has had no cases of virus transmission for the last year since this began. Obviously, in March, we weren't in session, but we can start from August. There's been no, and in the district, there have been, as of approximately last Thursday, there have been over 600 students that were sent to remote learning because of exposure in school or at a school event. There was one student who came down with the virus, and it was a close friend. They were together for 5 hours in close contact over the course of 2 days. They ate lunch together, and they ate lunch together closer than 3 feet and with their masks off. It makes sense that that could have happened. Right? That is the only case. So what does that mean in simple language? That our schools are by far one of the safest places that our students can be. So there are students who are getting the virus. Where are they getting the virus? Well, they're not getting it in school, so they're getting it outside of school. Right? So outside of school, wherever that setting may be, is less safe than being in school. So in some sense, the question would be, why is school so safe? Well, what I've already mentioned, and the other measures that the district has taken from the very beginning, including seriousness about mask wearing, not coming to school when you're ill, but also some very important behind-the-scenes work with air ventilation, because it was publicly available internationally, the importance of air quality with regards to virus transmission in the summer of last year. We took that research, those credible findings by experts about the aerosolization of the virus and the importance of air quality, outdoor air, etc. And we installed MERV 13 filters throughout our schools. We increased the amount of outside air that goes into all of our schools. We made sure that outside air was going into our schools and classrooms all the time. We have gotten our students out of the classroom. Even today, in the miserable cold weather, there were students who got out of the building. And many teachers have been taking advantage of that and getting students out to take a mask break as well as breathe in some outdoor air. We purchased, I don't know the total number, but at least 200 small HEPA air purifiers that are placed in strategic places around the district. Near a teacher's desk, in a counseling office, in classrooms that have more students than we feel comfortable with. So through the systemic issues that we are difficult to tailor for an individual classroom, plus the individual HEPA air filters and other air filters that we've installed, and then constant CO2 monitoring in all of the schools, in all of the spaces, and records being kept on that, with a reference to international standards for CO2 levels for virus mitigation, virus spread mitigation. And we know that we have had, we're not guessing, we know we've had good quality air in our schools. And on a few occasions where the CO2 levels spiked, it gave us immediate information about an issue that needed to be addressed. And then we were able to address it. So, There are a few other things that have been done to keep students safe, but it's not been by accident. So, dealing with individual cases in the school, what we have known from the very beginning is we could not exclude everybody that had the virus. It would just be impossible to do, so that the environment had to be resilient enough in terms of not spreading. And we couldn't have said in August that we knew what would happen, but today is April 19th, and we can say with certainty that our schools have been very safe for students. Now, how do we know those numbers that I mentioned? Our district nurse, our teachers, and school leaders have been doing targeted contact tracing since the very beginning, which is in a people-intensive and information-intensive process of who was within 6 feet for more than 15 minutes. And then developing those lists, and then we have been sending those students to remote learning. We have not been quarantining students or staff. That is not what we see as our job. Our job is to have safe in-person instruction, and if students or staff don't meet the conditions for safe in-person instruction or safe work at school, then they're not supposed to be here. And we've been very generous with our staff to say, if you have COVID-related symptoms, if you have concerns, if you've been exposed, please stay home. And they have. And we've supported that by being very generous in terms of not requiring them to use their own personal sick time to do that. Why? Because we don't want them to think twice about showing up. We, to my knowledge, I don't know of a case of exposure in the school since January from an adult. We had a few in the fall. So the plan to move forward is to remain in person and to continue to do targeted contact tracing when students come in to the school with the virus, to reduce the number of students that are impacted by that exposure, and to not send them from what we know to be a safe place into a place that we know is less safe. We know that especially high school students, if they're not in school, they're going to be getting together. They have transportation. They don't need constant adult supervision like an elementary student does. They will be getting together, as we've seen recently, leading up to the prom, at parties, in picture events, and other activities, social activities, where the layers of protection that we provide when students are in school or school events is not the same. And so what we can assure our students and their families is that we are ensuring layers of protection every day for the 40 hours a week that kids are approximately that are in school. So that's the basis for my decision to, one, not close the high school for 14 days, and to then also bring it to your attention, and to, for you to be able to ask questions, to discuss the matter, so that we move forward in partnership. I understand that the superintendent of a school district has the authority to close school for safety-related reasons. The easiest example is weather, but there are other times where I have had to authorize the closure of school for safety-related issues. In this case, I cannot, in good conscience, send our students from what we know to be a safe place to a lesser safe place, and I don't believe that my authority extends that far. It's not clear to us the criteria with which that was used by public health to make this recommendation, and that's what they're calling it, a recommendation. The CDPHE outbreak guidance, which you all have a copy of, on page 11, says the criteria for school closures, that a school should be closed when 5 or more classroom cohort outbreaks occur within a 14-day period. We had one case last Monday on the 12th. A student came in, another on, I believe, Thursday the 15th. And then prior to this meeting, I was informed that there were 3 individuals with the virus at prom. 2 attend Elizabeth High School, and one was a guest, and actually a guest of the one of the other two. The staff have done contact tracing for all of these. And I believe that approximately 40 students were sent to remote learning as a result of the exposure on Thursday and then at prom or after prom, the school events. We are not, and we don't have the authority nor the capacity to send kids to remote learning based on community events, because we don't, it's a guessing game. We don't have the knowledge to do that. If a student comes and says, I was at such and such a location where this known person was, and therefore I really should probably go to remote learning, then the principal has the authority to grant remote learning for that student. More broadly, our principals were given from the very start the authority to allow students to shift to remote learning, primarily and almost exclusively for health reasons or COVID-related reasons. And so we have not been allowing people to go to remote learning for other reasons. And those decisions are still in the hands of the principal. And I know that, I don't know their full decision-making criteria, which is why it's delegated to them, but they hear the situation of each person who makes that request, and then they make a decision. And I believe they've been fair about that. They've been making consistent decisions. They've been doing a very good job of listening. All of our leaders are excellent listeners, so and are very understanding of the situation that our families are in. So I want to just make sure to address a couple of questions that have been communicated. You know, we're not clear the precise criteria, because precise criteria were not provided to us by public health for their recommendation. But one of the criteria was that was mentioned, or environmental situations, was the number of positive cases in the community, and that it's been on the rise. The number of positive cases in the community right now is not higher than in any other point in this pandemic. So when there have been other times during the pandemic when the number of cases has been on the rise, what's been true is that there's still been no spread in the schools. And it's been true that the school hasn't contributed to that rise. There may be cases that we don't know about. So I don't mean to say we have 100% information, but our district nurse coordinates almost on a daily basis with the Elbert County Public Health on contact tracing. And so all of the data that I presented to you tonight has been through a collaborative effort of the information that is shared with us from Elbert County Public Health, the information that we've collected on our own, that is shared back and forth very openly on a regular basis. And I believe in the professionalism and the quality of work that those individuals and all of the supporting individuals have done. So I believe that is very reliable information, but is it perfect? And it is an exact no, but we do not have evidence of any other transmission. So what is the criteria? I think this is the same thing. What is the criteria that the health department is using to determine an outbreak? That would be a question for the health department. Who makes the final determination about whether or not one of our school district schools has to shut down? And I believe that's the superintendent, as the CEO of the district and as your single employee. You need to be notified of those decisions and to ratify them, which you do. So ultimately, I'm accountable to you all, the school board,
right,
to make decisions that are within my authority and that are appropriate given the circumstances. So there've been questions about what's the scientific evidence for this decision, and also a concern about whether there are other motivations. I can tell you my motivations and my evidence. That's what was presented in my letter and what I repeated here tonight. That is, I think, very credible and reliable evidence about what we know to be true in terms of student safety and staff safety in our schools. And I think there might have been a misunderstanding with some of our parents that there were three additional cases today. There weren't. They're the same cases that I mentioned. There were two cases that I mentioned from prom in my letter, and I believe that as of today they discovered a third one. So there aren't three additional. It went from two to three in the course of their contact tracing and information that was being gathered. So it's my sincere hope that we can continue to not only remain in person, but safely in person in all of our schools for the next 5 weeks. There's a lot of important events in school and out of school for students. And I think that the in-school behavior is really important to remaining in person rather than remote. But also out-of-school behavior is important. So for anybody that has very personally hot, important events, just things that really matter to the students and to the families, that they look at their own actions in addition to what's going on at the school and take the necessary precautions. An easy one is really to just avoid close contact with other people as much as possible. And, the other is when you can't avoid close contact or you're sharing the same indoor air for an extended period of time, to make sure that location has good air circulation and plenty of outdoor air, and if necessary, to wear masks. In the schools, masks are not optional. But outside, I know that many members of our community make individual choices about when to wear a mask or not. So there are other things that our families can do to help minimize the risk of spread outside the community, but that is where our students have been getting the virus, outside of the school. Sorry, I said outside the community, in the community. And that's where the continued risk for remaining safely in person exists. Because if the number of students that come to the high school or any of our schools with the virus is too large, it will precipitate larger numbers of exclusions from in-person learning, and it could potentially result in a temporary closure of in-person learning at the school. So that's really what's kept us safe so far is the small number of students that have come in, and that's what we need to happen for the remainder of the school year. We shortened, in specific cases, the quarantine protocol for 5 days without or after exposure in the school or at a school event. 5 days without symptoms and a negative test, the student can return to shorten the impact. Given that all of the students we sent home except one have not had the virus, their lives have been disrupted, and those around them, their lives have been disrupted, really out of an overabundance of caution. And so we want to reduce that here when students and staff and families are counting down, just in some mind, some folks are counting down the days, how many more days are left, and really trying to do the things that really matter for them. The eighth grade continuation, the elementary field days, there's athletics, there's shows, there's you know, things outside of school, that even work, you know, because our students are working. So I hope that I've covered everything that you think is important, but I welcome questions, welcome discussion, invite discussion among board members, but especially after the work that the high school did today to do the contact tracing, to inform those that were exposed with that definition of 6 feet or less for more than 15 minutes. They've been notified, they've been given the instructions about when they can return to school. But we're planning to continue to operate school tomorrow and forward.
I just want to reiterate something that you said that I think is very important, just for all of us to hear it again, is that word accountability. And the accountability of the staff, the accountability of this, most importantly, the students, maybe equally as important, the accountability of the parents, and making sure that you're not putting your kids, you're not putting your students into a position where there is risk. I mean, at the end of the day, it's the parents that make the big difference here. It's the parents that can say, no, you're not going anywhere, you're staying home. So I appreciate what you said, Douglas. I know it's become a new potential career for you, this COVID virus, over the past year. You're probably more well-informed than many I've ever spoken to. So appreciate everything you've done, appreciate everything the staff has done, and appreciate everything my fellow board members have done here too, because it's been a challenging year, that's for sure.
In my visits to the schools, most recently the high school, overwhelmingly the staff, the teachers, everybody was just really engaged in making sure they're wearing their masks, and there didn't appear to be a huge fear factor at all among any of them, and they were all very diligent. They were responsible. They showed us in their classrooms how they were responsible. So I agree. I mean, it's you really have handled this extremely well for this year and last, but more importantly this year, and it shows. And so it didn't bother me at all to be in the school and talk with students and teachers and staff. It was great.
So I think that was brought up to us. I think the board should probably reinforce the keep your kids home if they're sick, if they have this, if they have a cold, maybe send a letter to parents. And I don't know what you guys think.
No, I completely agree.
Coming from us, not just from the school,
yes.
not just from Douglas, but
I agree.
To put something together to please, please, let us stay in person for the rest of the year. Follow the rules. Keep your kids home.
Personal responsibility.
Personal responsibility.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So,
bear the burden.
Yeah, and Douglas, thank you. I know you've done a lot of research on this. You guys got ahead of this before the school year started mm-hmm. and knew what to do to help mitigate the risk for the students and the staff and everybody. And it's clearly worked. And I agree with you. I think the kids are safer in the school. I mean,
absolutely.
No spread in the school, but they're catching the community. Why are we going to send them out to the community to go do what they want for 2 weeks, to gather in the basement to play Nintendo or whatever it is they play these days, where there's no air circulation? So, and you know, we all know, we've all had kids. They're going to get together.
Mm-hmm. So. Agreed.
It was just common sense.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, they're going to. Obviously, they have been if there were already parties.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're getting spring fever. They want to be out of school. But they don't want to be out of school, forced out of school for 2 weeks. So, anyway.
Carol, might I recommend that we just maybe voice our support in the decision that Douglas has made? Or is that inappropriate at this time?
No, we're not going to take a vote.
No. I just...
Right.
Voice of support.
Yeah.
No vote or anything of that nature, but
like a sure,
thumbs
absolutely.
Up, thumbs
yeah.
down.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's why we're talking about this.
Oh, okay.
So
perfect.
He knows that he has our support.
Right.
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 Would you prefer that we go around
no.
one by one?
Okay.
I think it. You have none of you yet have expressed concerns or doubts or criticisms of the approach that we've taken. So. What I feel and hear and see is your support for the work of all of our staff in the direction that we're taking. So I appreciate that. And
just from the outcome that we have from our community, from our parents that have said numerous times, God, I'm so proud that we're in school and that our kids are able to have that opportunity. So, I mean, you have my full support.
Even outside the district.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, you know.
Correct.
I wish my kids were there.
Exactly. Yeah, I wish, yep.
Listen, one of the things is that we have not taken this lightly and we haven't taken the protocols lightly. Mm-hmm. So this decision to not follow the recommendation of local public health is not the pattern that we've taken. I mean, I know that local public health kept the county in a certain level when the data showed it moved to another level. I know that the county is removed its restrictions, its COVID dial restrictions,
mm-hmm.
And so really trying to understand both local public health and other public health agencies around the state and their differing actions has been a challenge. One thing I mentioned in the letter and would like to repeat here is that public health agencies around the state have been interpreting the outbreak guidance differently, and there are cases that I'm intimately familiar with of schools that have had far more many cases than Elizabeth High School in the period of 14 days, week after week after week after week, in Tri-County Health, which has taken this very seriously as well, is responsible for a lot of municipalities, counties, three counties, and a lot of students, and they have not declared those outbreaks, and they certainly meet the same definition that I read, or exceed it. So one of the questions that I've had is, well, why is that the case? And I don't have a clear answer, but I do have a speculation. The reason there's been inconsistent public health enforcement of the outbreak guidance and declaring outbreaks in schools is because it's a problematic guidance. Two or more cases that come from the outside doesn't really represent the health risk of virus spread. What does is when they're spread in the setting. But it's expected that there would be more as the community numbers increase. And so does that in and of itself mean that the site becomes more risky? If the site has been proven to mitigate the spread, then my answer is no. And so I appreciate appreciate your support through all of this. You've, I think, done a great job understanding the governance role and assisting all of us from a governance perspective, and given us the guidance we need without being overly intrusive in operational decisions. And I think that that's allowed our staff to really shine. There's been a lot of independent thinking, a lot of independent action, and a lot that's been done by staff because they feel supported by the school board. And they've taken this seriously, and that's the thing that I want to repeat. It's not as if we've thrown the protocols to the wind leading up to this, nor that we continue to. We will continue to do everything we know that's kept folks safe. That's not a change. But this impact isn't warranted. The negative impact of a 14-day shutdown of in-person instruction is not warranted, in my opinion, based on the number of cases and what's happening.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
One last thing, we sent out a notice to all high school parents if they wanted to communicate. We did get a number of communications. Those are all been printed and they're in front of you. The vast majority of them were very positive and supportive and encouraging of the school board to allow the schools to continue to be in person. I've also received quite a few individual from the messages that I've sent out over the last few days, both the one last week on Thursday and then the one on Sunday, of thanking all of the staff and the schools for what we've done and really encouraging us. So that's been the by far 20-to-1 ratio of there have been a couple of questions and a couple of concerns, but really no strong, let alone overwhelming negative response. And yeah, I'm just reporting to you the summary of what you've got.
Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Does anybody have anything else?
No.
Okay.
Thanks again, though.
You're welcome.
Oh, you still have class size report? You're not done?
Yes, I'm not done. So, twice a year, Shelley School Week, our data specialist, student data specialist, produces a report for the board that lets you see the class sizes, especially relative to board policy with regards to class sizes, and just to give a sense of what's going on in school. So you have a copy of that. Our class sizes are really, they've been very good this year. We had about, I don't know the most current number, but about 7% of the students that requested 100% online learning in the first semester. I think that number went down. I know the number went down for the second semester. I just don't know by how much. It could be as low as 4 or 5%. So that has helped reduce some class sizes. There's very few class sizes that exceed the recommended number. The middle school has always been a challenge with class sizes because of how they've structured with a sixth grade team, a seventh grade team, and an eighth grade team, and more or less the same number of teachers. And so when you have more students in a particular cohort, those class sizes can tend to go up where you see that both sixth grade advanced math and the sixth grade advanced reading both have 30 and 33 students. Good news is we've got, that many students that are at advanced reading and advanced math, but the elementary numbers are really strong in terms of student-teacher ratio of 15-to-1 or average class size of 18. Those sorts of numbers are not what we would typically expect, but because of the pandemic, a little bit better. And I think that's the case for many school districts around the state. If you have questions, I'd be happy to answer them. I think the report also shows you how many students in each school are on the 100% online.
That's all. Okay, now you're done. But you go longer. Okay, well, thank you very much. So we will move on to HR finance update. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'll start.
That's good. Yep.
Oh, because it's one.
Yeah, Brian and I have been working together on this one.
That's okay.
They just can't sit at the same table right now.
Yeah, you confused me there for a minute.
It's like, I changed you up.
I just read it.
They don't normally have a report on a work session.
Right. Yeah.
That's
so
true.
So this is a special agenda item.
Yeah. Okay, you're
but
special.
We were gracing you with our presence.
We appreciate that.
The next meeting.
We always love to see you guys.
So Ron and I have been working pretty diligently over the last several weeks on pay recommendations for next school year. We're getting close to the end of this school year. This is about the time when we do our work to see what we're able to do for next year. And based on Ron's projections of what funding may be available or probably be available next school year, we have revised our salary schedules for next year. Now, we're not asking for you to vote on these tonight to approve them. We just wanted to make sure you had some time to look at them, and then we'll bring it back to you on May 3rd and hopefully get your approval, but that's our intent for May 3rd, is to bring it back to you. Some of the highlights, and I did put them in the memo, Ron and I did, is all of our certified staff, that includes teachers, of course, counselors, and special service providers. The first thing that we did is we added $1,000 to the base. And what that means is that all steps, all current steps in the current pay schedule went up by are going up by $1,000 for next year, which will be quite nice for our certified staff. In addition, they'll receive steps, and our steps average anywhere, most of our steps average around $800 to $850 a step.
Right.
So that will be a nice potential increase for our classified staff.
Certified
staff.
Well, okay. Like certified. Yeah. We're not adding $1,000 to each step. We're adding the step will be whatever the step is currently, like about $850. The increase will be the $850 plus $1,000, which will not become part of a permanent step increase, but just part of the permanent increase to the base for each column.
Is that
clarified or make it worse?
No, that is actually the question I
have. I used the term step and probably didn't use it quite. It may be a little bit misleading, so thanks.
Sure.
Thanks for that.
Well, I think if you look at the draft schedule that they have, you can see that the starting salary was previously $34,000,
right.
And it's moving to $35,000.
Yes.
Right.
So they all went up $1,000,
so,
like that.
Yes.
Okay, that's
yes.
Right. That's what I thought. But
yes.
Sure. Okay.
And then for our classified staff, was probably our biggest challenge because over the years, our classified staff salary schedule has gone in a lot of different directions to accommodate minimum wage, to accommodate other factors, market factors, that type of thing, to the point where we felt we had to make some changes to it and make it more consistent and a little bit more competitive than it has been. So for our classified group, we have raised our lowest hourly rate high enough to avoid having to play with this because minimum wage is going up every year by the cost of living. Now, that doesn't mean that it won't be at some point where we will need to raise that first step to accommodate the minimum wage, but that probably is several years out at this point. We also made adjustments to the steps themselves to try to put a little bit more distance between the steps, so that it's a little bit more of an incentive for people to go from step to step. And then from pay column to pay column, we've also tried to incorporate a little bit more distance. And most of the changes that we made on that classified schedule involve the first three or four pay columns, A through C, A through D, because those were our lowest paid employees, and we felt we needed to dedicate some funding
to those, so we're a little bit more competitive in the market. So you'll, if you look closely and compare it to last year, you'll see some changes there. And then we're also moving a few job titles from one pay column to another pay column based on our ability to attract and retain employees in those. We've done a lot of that over the last several years, which has made a real difference, particularly for bus drivers, for custodians, for special ed paras, and it's made a difference for us. For example, our health aides who are dealing with our students who are ill or medications, that type of thing, we're in column A, which is our lowest paid pay column for years. We're moving that to column D for this year.
Great.
To recognize the importance of those positions and the people that are doing that work. And then for administrative staff for next year, the average pay increase for our classified and certified employees for next year is 4.3%. So we tend to, for admin, we tend to try to follow those average increases. But instead of 4.3%, we're just recommending 4% for admin for next year. So it's not any higher than them, and maybe a little bit lower, but still a potential impactful pay increase for next year for administrators that have done so much work this past year, as you all know. So that's where we stand right now, and what you see in these pay schedules is what we'll bring to you on May 3rd for your approval. And I think these represent some movement in pay that, along with the MLO that passed in 2018, has made some real difference for our employees. And I'm real pleased with these the way they are. And Ron, did you have anything you wanted to add to what I said?
Just to add a little bit on the classified. Classified, we really struggled in there because over the years, as Kim pointed out, with the minimum wage increases, we initially, because we didn't have the money to immediately address it, they started, we had to make sure that absolute starting wage was minimum wage. And when we did that, we tried to also decompress, because it led to a lot of compression in terms of the salaries or the hourly wages. There wasn't a large discernible difference between step to step to step or to column to column to column. And so, because we didn't have the money to really address it a few years ago, we basically say, you know, we kicked the can down the road until we could address it. And now we are addressing it. But also, we've added quite a bit of money, relatively speaking, compared to what we've done in prior years to the classified scale. So what you see in front of you is the product of the work that we've done to not only add enough money so we don't have to adjust it every single year because of the minimum wage increase. We added more to the top left-hand corner to make sure we didn't have to touch that for a few years. But in doing so, we added a little bit more, significantly more money in the first three or four columns than we did the other columns. And so to adjust that, we then added some more increases as we went further to the right there in terms of money to the base from what we originally would have done in prior years. So that is a product. All of the classified salary schedule has had money added to the base, including the separate salary schedule for the bus drivers. But that was one of our goals this year, was to try and decompress and then actually add some incentive moving from step to step or column to column in the job. So
to make a long story short, this is a better pay schedule. These are better pay schedules than we've had. And they're more competitive. They're not where we want to be yet, but they're going in the right direction. And I'm real pleased that we have the opportunity to do this.
Yeah, I agree.
No positions in column B for classes.
No, we don't. At the time being, we have nothing in column B. We did, for example, we had preschool teachers at column B, but they're moving up in terms of the recommendation, assistant preschool teachers to column D. They were in column B, which was quite low. And these are people that are making a real difference. These are the people that are teaching some of the real, real, real young kids that will be coming hopefully to our schools in the future. And I don't think those jobs have been valued properly. And that's one of the jobs, along with health technicians, that I'm planning on moving up to recognize the importance of those positions and our ability to retain those people.
That's great.
What does it mean on here for the initial placement? You said on the top of it,
yeah.
It says one experience step is credited for each year of comparable job experience to a maximum of 15 steps.
Right. When we hire a new person from the outside into one of these jobs, we look at their related experience. And the number of years of related experience determines what pay step they'll be in that pay column. But we will not go above 15 steps. We won't bring them in above 15 steps. When I first started here 9 years ago, the rule was 10 steps. So we were more restricted, where we would not bring a new person in above step 10. We changed that to step 15, again, to make ourselves more competitive. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much.
We'll be back then.
That's important because we do want to attract people with experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what happens when you only give credit, say, for 10 years of experience is the perception on the part of the person interested in working for us that they're not going to be recognized for their experience, their relevant experience. So we've gotten more experienced employees as a result because they say, okay, you're going to recognize my 15 years of experience, and say, yeah, we hope to benefit from it too, so you should be rewarded for it.
And our certified staff was also, the ceiling was 10 steps, and a number of years ago we changed that to 15 also. So all of our employees, it's up to as high as step 15 starting off.
Thank you guys.
Thanks.
Thank you
very much.
Okay, moving on to the consent agenda.
What? Can I?
Yep,
just
you can.
A little bit?
Sure.
So, you know, HR, right?
Yeah.
So, can we do like a formal introduction?
Absolutely.
I
didn't have a plan, so.
Okay. You did or didn't?
I had a plan for all the other agenda items, but not.
Okay. So, this is Brett Michael.
Hi,
Brett. Went through a process the last couple weeks, and we had some wonderful applicants for the middle school principal position, and very good applicants. We were really pleased with the response that we got. And Brett rose to the top. Brett is a former employee here, a math teacher at Elizabeth High School, and then we sadly lost him, I think it was 2015? And since then, he's been in a number of different administrative positions, really a real breadth of experience as an assistant principal, as a dean, as an athletic director, all at the middle school level. And so he has a lot of experience there. He impressed our various panels that included both staff, leadership, parents. We had a parent on one of our panels that was very active on the panel, very helpful. And we're just thrilled to have Brett here. He's coming here with a lot of experience, a lot of ideas. The staff panel there loved him, so that helped. And we had a great process. It worked out really well, and I'm just so pleased because we are not having to worry about the next school year. Yeah. We're going in. Brett can work a little bit with Pam before Pam leaves. He'll have the summer to prepare himself and to get familiar with the staff and they with him. And it couldn't be a better situation. So I want to welcome you, Brett, and looking forward to you being here for a long time. You'll be a great member of our leadership team. So thanks for wanting to be here. We appreciate it.
Very much looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in tonight.
Yeah,
we appreciate it. We're happy to have you here.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Brett lives in the community as well, so it was, you know, don't compliment him too much for being here because he is.
He didn't.
I know he didn't walk. It wasn't a commute.
Thank you for walking uphill all the way in the snow.
Both ways.
Both ways. We appreciate that.
And Kim mentioned that he taught math at the high school, and he also taught math at the middle school. And I think it's because it's public information, but his wife also taught at Elizabeth High School when he was here. She was the performing arts theater teacher and did a great job for us. And both of them did a great job as teachers here. And I think personally that that's really important. Brett's success as a teacher is important as a school leader, that to understand what goes on in the classroom, the job that teachers do, what works with students, and as a principal, you know, that's important to really understand that well, and I believe that Brett does, and really looking forward to working with him, and I know many of our staff are, so I do want to add my personal welcome and thank you. The application process is grueling. Not only do we do reference checks, but we make them do a role play. We have them imagine that they're the principal, and then we give them a challenging, ambiguous situation to work through with the group. We had them work on how does the middle school prepare middle school students to be successful at the high school given the Homegrown Talent Initiative project. No right answer there. So they had to reverse roles and not sit there and just answer questions, but lead the group through. We got to see very different approaches, but it helps us get to know candidate, but it also helps the candidate get to know us, because then they get to work with our folks in a different way rather than just answering questions. So, and his references were excellent, and we have different people make those reference calls to avoid the chance of potential selective listening or interest on the part of one or two people. So, and we had some that just turned up informally as well, because it's a small state, and education is a small world. So, anyway.
Great. Welcome back.
I know. Yes.
Welcome back, Cotter.
Yeah, been away
before. Welcome back, Brett with two T's.
This is Brett with
two T's.
Okay. Well, thank you.
And I don't know if I sent it to you, but a message announcing his hire was sent out this afternoon.
Okay,
so
good.
All the staff and parents were informed this afternoon, and that it was expected to be on your agenda tonight for us.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else? We can day off. Okay. So we'll move on to the consent agenda. Can I get a motion to approve items 8.1 through 8.4?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Director Pangador?
Yes.
Director Krumpfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Haynes?
Aye.
Director Kircher?
Aye.
Okay, moving on to action items. Can I get a motion to approve item 9.1, approve ESSER 2 grant assurances?
So moved.
Second.
I heard him first. Discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Krumpfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Haynes?
Aye.
Director Kircher?
Aye.
Moving on to 9.2, can I get a motion to approve ESSER 3 grant assurances?
So moved. Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Krumpfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Dr. Haynes?
Aye.
Dr. Kircher?
Aye.
Okay, moving on to second reading of revised policies. Do y'all make these second and final? Is there any reason we couldn't? Okay. Are you guys good with second and final?
Yes.
For all of them?
Yes.
Okay. So these will all be second and final. Can I get a motion to approve 9.3 for second and final, GBGL staff victim leave?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Krumpfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Haynes?
Aye.
Director Kircher?
Aye.
Moving on to 9.4, can I get a motion to approve GBGJ staff bereavement leave?
So moved. Second.
Discussion? Roll call.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Fernfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Heinz?
Aye.
Director Partridge?
Aye.
Moving on to 9.5, can I get a motion to approve KF community use of school facilities?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Fernfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Heinz?
Aye.
Director Partridge?
Aye.
Moving on to 9.6, can I get a motion to approve KF-R-1 community use of school facilities?
So moved.
Did you say second? Did you?
Very, very quietly.
I didn't hear you. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Fernfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Heinz?
Aye.
Director Partridge?
Aye.
And as I turn the page over, the last word of that one was regulation. I missed that one. Moving on to 9.7, can I get a motion to approve KF-R-2 community use of school facility category for assessing fees regulation?
Second.
Psych.
Discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Fernfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Heinz?
Aye.
Director Carter?
Aye.
Moving on to 9.8, can I get a motion to approve KF-R-3 community use of school facility, custodial and facility use fees regulation?
So moved.
Second.
First, second?
Yeah.
Okay.
Discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Kronfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Heinz?
Aye.
Director Kartrick?
Aye.
Moving on to 9.9, can I get a motion to approve DKC expense authorization / reimbursement, mileage, and travel?
So moved.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Kronfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Heinz?
Aye.
Director Kartrick?
Aye.
Moving on to 9.10, can I get a motion to approve policy DKC-R expense authorization reimbursements?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Carpella?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Haynes?
Aye.
Director Carter?
Aye.
Thank you guys for doing second and final. That's a lot to read. We have no discussion items. Moving on to BOE planning, and our next board meeting is Monday, May 3rd, 2021. If you can't be there, let Kristen and myself know. And we have a retreat coming up on Saturday, 10 o'clock, right? Is it 10 o'clock?
I will be there a bit later.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. And if anybody has something they want on the agenda, email it to me.
Okay. Are we doing that at the library?
Yeah.
You said that. Okay.
Okay.
I won't be here on
Okay. So anybody else can't make it, let us know, because we need three in the room.
I will be here.
Okay. Good deal.
I'm here.
Okay.
Turkey.
Well, are you going to bring us all Thanksgiving turkey?
Priorities.
Okay. Then you can go.
Then you're excused.
Then you're excused.
As long as I bring it back.
We're
going
to hold you to that.
Yeah.
They hope so, yeah. Actually, no, I don't want them to hold them to be Friars. We have no need for executive session, so I will... during this meeting at 7:16 p.m.